You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, I'll have a conversation with some people in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. They are the owners of H-Town Restaurant Group, the company behind Hugo's, Backstreet Cafe, Urbe, Sochi, Caracol, and most importantly for our purposes, Zaranda, their new restaurant in downtown Houston. Let me introduce y'all individually so people can hear your voices. Tracy Vaught, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Chef Hugo Ortega, welcome to the show.
H-Town Restaurant Group, Hugo Ortega over here. Thank you.
And finally, last but not least, Sophia Ortega is also joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, guys. Excited to be here today.
All right. Look, I only do this when I have either couples who are married or in a long-term relationship on the show. But Tracy and Hugo, can you tell me a little bit about how you met, or maybe more importantly, how you kind of went from employee-employer to a couple that has now built this incredible business together and raised a daughter and all that stuff?
Well, from the get-go, and I knew that Tracy was a catch, so I went for it.
I hired Hugo back in, I think it was 1987, as a dishwasher at Backstreet Cafe. And he played soccer with one of our busboys. So that's how we were introduced. And so at that time, he didn't speak any English. And, you know, he was a dishwasher. And he moved up. He became a busser and got a little bit more English, a little bit more brave. And then he was cooking in the kitchen. And anyway, we got together after a company party at the beach. So then I moved him over to Prego so that, you know, we wouldn't be working together side by side. And that's how that developed.
And then you opened Hugo's together in what, 1994, I think?
No, that was in 2002.
2002. Mm-hmm. Take me back to that time, because you had been doing, like you said, you'd had Prego, which was Italian. You had Backstreet Cafe, which is kind of classic American. What do you remember from opening Hugo's and bringing this kind of elevated Mexican cuisine to Houston, really for the first time that anyone had tried it?
I have some memories of that I would like to share. One is that when we would go to the Mexican restaurant, Hugo would be confused and would say, well, I've never seen a burrito. I've never seen a taco salad, nachos, fajitas, all this. And I didn't understand why he had never seen these things. And that's what I knew as Mexican food. And so after doing a little bit of research, I understood better that it was regional, you know, that in different regions of Mexico, different things are served. And Hugo grew up around Puebla, Oaxaca, but also Mexico City. And that is his entire experience with food in Mexico when he was young. So he had never seen some of these things. So anyway, we developed that we wanted to open a Mexican restaurant, but serving more what he knew as Mexican food. And so signed the lease, and that was in 2001, early 2001, I think. And then my partner, who was really had the money, passed away unexpectedly. And so I wasn't sure how to proceed or if I even could proceed. And so it was kind of between rock and hard place, really, and ended up proceeding, getting a loan at the bank and small business loan, and did proceed. So we opened up in July of 2002.
Hugo, what do you remember about that time? I mean, you know, you're trying to introduce this to people, and you're not doing fajitas and cheese enchiladas or chips and salsa or all the other things that people thought was Mexican food, as opposed to what we understand now. It's the difference between Mexican food and Tex-Mex.
Well, actually, Eric, I think everything was fine, meaning we find the space, and like Tracy mentioned, we lease the space, and then one day, out of the blue, she proposed that I should cook the food from the countryside that I'm from. And that is when, you know, it changed my thinking. And first, you know, I remember that I was pretty concerned, scared. And the first couple of sentences that came from my mouth to Tracy were this: Tracy, that is a lot of work. And what I mean by that, you know, as you know, these days, cooking the food, you know, making a mole, tamales, all that is the love of labor. It's everything a mano by hand. And that is how I learned to cook with my grandmother over there in that region in Mexico. So Central Mexico, in the state of Puebla, in Oaxaca, right at the borderline. So there was no electricity, no water, no source of fire. We make a live fire every day, and light was very slow. So those are the things that came to my mind. I say, how am I going to be able to cook that food here? You know, we should take the whole day just to cook something, and you leave to cook over there to eat. And that was about it. It was very slow. So those were my concerns back then. The regionality where I'm from, it was that type of cuisine, that type of cooking.
Did people embrace it right away, or did it take a little bit to get them in the door?
Well, I mean, the way I remember it was different than Tracy remembers. I just say, you know, thinking that I was just young and tried to do my best, and I think we opened it on a Thursday, or
I think it was a Thursday.
And everything changed when that article came out.
Right.
Yeah.
I forgot which article.
Di Nguyen wrote an article. And Hugo, it was I don't know, 3/4 of a page, like front fold, you know, with a photo of Hugo. And that came out on a Sunday. And then things really took off. You know, we, in that menu, the beginning menu, it was like a little book. And we had a glossary in there of terms because, you know, there weren't English words for some of those things because that's just what they are, right? So you know, we had that glossary and that helped a lot, and tried to write a introduction that would explain if anybody cared to read that. And, you know, different writers helped explain what we were doing. I think that really helped us a lot.
I remember one thing that was very peculiar. We opened on a Thursday, and, you know, we opened around 11 o'clock or so, and it was 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And we had one table, and I think that table was our neighbor or
I don't know.
somebody and of course, in the kitchen, you have 20 strong cooks over there. You know, that's what I meant by, you know, the way you cook this food. Let's say, yes, for example, made masa. You know, we have to cook the corn and then cool the corn overnight. That way the kal, what is the name in English? The kal, sorry. The kal make his work, meaning soften the corn overnight. And then we wash it the next morning. I will remember the name of this powder. And then the next morning we wash the corn and ground it on the molino. I still have the same molino that I use when we open Hugo's. So anyway, go back to the day we opened. Tracy calling me, you know, over the dining room, and she whispered me this. She said, "Hugo, I don't know if we're going to make it. We have one table and you have 30 cooks in the kitchen." And that was a scare, you know, that was a scare, but I didn't know how to do it other way, you know, except by just do it the way we did it. Invest the whole day creating some dishes and making some mole and make everything from scratch, our cheeses, our moles, our sauces. Tortillas, you know, it's the way I knew it, and that was about it.
All right, and then one last question about this, and then I promise I'll move on to Zaranda. But when did you roll out Sunday brunch? Because that is maybe the one meal that I associate with Hugo's more than anything else.
Well, I mean, you know, that kind by the love of the
I don't remember.
I think it was around 2008 for whatever reason, I think. Sometime in there. And that came, and I was mentioned the law because Sunday is the, in our country, in Mexico, Sunday is where people got together, where families go visit each other, when we go to church, everything. The social, it happened on Sunday. So I came with the idea to tell Tracy. I said, you know, Tracy, I think we should do cazuelas on Sunday, because it's when families gathered up in their homes, you know, in that part of the country. And it's to socialize and to visit each other and to learn from each other and to just be together. So that is what represents, you know, Domingo de Cazuelas or Sunday brunch a la Mexicana.
I mean, it's an incredible spread. Like it's been, I don't know, maybe a year or so since my last time eating it, but just the bounty of it all. And still, I mean, I'm sure it was much less expensive then than it is now in terms of the cost for the diner. But even still, it, you know, I think it's what, like $45 now. It's like such a, you get so much food, so much variety. It's like every, you know, every time I drive past you on a Sunday, it's like, the parking lot is full. The dining room is full. Everybody's happy. It's just, it's, you know, and it's become so popular that now all of your restaurants serve it.
Mm-hmm. I was actually there yesterday.
Yeah.
For Sunday.
How was it?
Friends. It was so fun. You know, I always, if I'm eating at one of our restaurants, I have to give a full report back to my bosses over here. But I hadn't, you know, no notes. I was like, it was such a great time. The music was great. All my friends like loved what they had, and you know, it was just a fun atmosphere. And I usually don't go on Sundays because it's kind of hectic and I get a little like stressed out, but I was like, no, I'm gonna go and have a good time. And it was
I'm gonna save room for a hot chocolate and a couple of churros, and that's gonna and then right home and straight into a nap. That's the plan.
Oh yeah. All of us were like, we're so full we could explode right now.
All right. Let us talk about, let's move on to Zaranda. This is the, am I saying it properly? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you do.
Zaranda. This is your new restaurant. It's in the Norton Fulbright Tower, right next to Discovery Green in downtown Houston. Tracy or Hugo, either one of you, just start at the beginning with kind of how you decided that it was the right time to open your first restaurant since Urbe opened back in 2021.
I think that's for Tracy to answer. You know, she found this spot, so I think Tracy should.
Well, I wasn't anticipating. We were not looking for a location. We're not thinking about opening anything. And the person that I work with in real estate called me up and said, "Will you do me a favor? I want to go look at this space that is for lease, and if I say I'm bringing you, they'll let me come look at it." You know, that's his way of making me come, I guess. So I went to look at the space, and it was kind of compelling because it was all these windows on the park, this long space, but it had all this frontage. And I thought, gosh, you know, it's a skinny, long space. That's sort of tricky. Where do you put the kitchen and all that? You know, not sure if it's practical. And so we ended up working on it to see if there was something we felt like we could do. And yes, so, you know, I brought the rest of our group in to see it, to see if they felt the same way that I did, you know, and they all did. They all said, "Oh, we love that. We love that space. It's going to be so, you know, pretty to be able to look out on the park and all that." So after that is when we sat down to say, you know, what does that space tell us, or what is it, you know, how does that space inspire us? And that's where, you know, really Hugo is the person that came up with the idea behind what we were trying to do at Zaranda.
All right. I want to talk about the cuisine, but let me just take a half a step back. Were you not concerned that it was too close, physically close to Sochi?
I was somewhat concerned about that. I mean, but it's a unique location in that you have these thousands of people coming into town for conventions every week, not only in the convention center, but also in the two big hotels that are, well, three, the Four Seasons, you know, the Marriott and the Hilton, and they all do conventions as well. So I felt like that's a, you know, infusion of new people every 3 or 4 days. So I didn't feel that way. I felt like most of those people are travelers, and that we can cross market between Sochi and Zaranda. And if they enjoy wherever, you know, Sochi or Zaranda, then we can recommend them to go to the other one. And so I think it's more like it's healthy.
Symbiotic. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the word.
All right. So Hugo, how did you, all right, you looked at the space, you liked the proximity to the park. You wanted to do something different than Sochi, which is Oaxacan cuisine. How did you get to Los Californios as the inspiration? This sort of idealized version of California that includes American California and Baja California.
I think that had something to do with in 2001, prior to the opening of Hugo's, I took a driving. I actually did it two times. I took a drive through Mexico with a cousin and my brother, Ruben. So we started in, over here in McAllen, and we went all the way to Tampico, Veracruz, Tabasco. And then we from Tabasco, we went to Oaxaca, Puebla.
Veracruz.
Yeah, Oaxaca, Puebla, and then Mexico City. And then I jumped on the Pacific coast. And we for whatever reason, I think we got lost, but I say, you know, we just need to continue going west and we will find the ocean eventually. So we did. And over there, we end up in this, the tiniest state in the country, which is Colima. And you know, it was so beautiful, a lot of coconut trees, of course, and macadamia nuts and things that I have not seen it on other parts of the country. So then we start driving north, you know, on the west side of the beautiful Pacific Ocean, and went from town to town. And anyway, we got to the Puerto Vallarta, and we started seeing these fish baskets. And I started asking, you know, over there, they put everything in that basket. It's a very special technique. They go back, you know, 500 years. But what it does, it protects the protein to not be direct over the fire or over the metal. So it could very gentle, you know, to put the protein on this basket. And this basket is called saranda. And so anyway, I got very interesting to learn. And so eventually I come back after 21 days of being on the road with my brother and cousin. And so I learned so much in on that part of the country, on that region. So anyway, by the time we opened Hugo's, I knew that Mexico had just shy of 9,000 miles or seashore, with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of recipes and way how to cook different types of dishes. And actually, that is my first, where I got my feet wet, you know, respecting so much about these recipes. And that's what inspired me to open first Caracol. And when Saranda came across, I don't want to brag, but I want to be thankful most of anything, that I knew in my heart that part of the region in Mexico had much to offer. And then for whatever reason, because we've been to California many times and it's so rich and everything grow in bounty over there, I was saying, Tracy, you know, I feel that they complement each other, because at some point in history, that's what it was. It was just Baja and Alta. And that's how the idea came. And that's where we are today. You know, I very humble in the way that it came to me. But I think it came by the pure knowledge and love for that part of the country that is so beautiful, and it has so much to offer.
Right. It does have so much to offer. And I, as a diner, I like that you're including so many influences on the menu. There's Japanese flavors and Chinese flavors and kind of classic American. And so talk a little bit about kind of looking at California as a whole and how you kind of integrated some of those flavors into these Mexican dishes that you're making.
Well, you know, the classic way to cook the fish, lobster, and anything that you want to, shrimp, octopus, calamar, is in the saranda, right? And you cook it, like I was mentioning before, in a very gentle way. The other influences, they there, and when Tracy, firsthand, we explore that region back in the early 90s, I took Tracy over there for the first time, and we were eating these cocktails, meaning these seafood cocktails on the street, and they use soy sauce for my eye appeal. Yeah, I can say that. And they were using ginger, and they were using this sauce and peppers that I have not seen it before. So that is, the influence that pushed me over, you know, to figure out a little bit more. And since that, we have gone many, many times to that. Now, the California part, I you know, it's been the ultimate pilgrimage to go down there and learn something about. It can be wine. It can be the beautiful cocina of California. I have the privilege to get to know a few chefs. Mike Comina, most recently over there, but Julian Serrano, also a tremendous chef from Spain. He had a restaurant called Masas.
It did.
Now I think he have a restaurant called Picasso in Las Vegas.
Right. Masa was in San Francisco, wasn't it? It was like this.
Yes.
I ate there in like 1993 with my family. It's
yeah.
To this day, it's one of the great meals of my life.
Yeah.
Us too.
And then we went to a Chinatown and of course we had Peking duck and so there is so much influence, so much to learn, so much to be aware of it. And ultimately, it pushes us over to figure it out, you know, prior to the when the Spanish arrived there and they built these missions. And anyway, that part of the story, Tracy can tell you a little bit more, is just overwhelming, you know, how these flavors and how this history come together and you know, Mexicans, Eric, they've been there in natives of America, they've been there for, you know, forever, and they love that land and they have figured out how to, they all work together, right? And especially on food. So there is so much history. It's incredible and beautiful too.
Yeah.
Beautiful land.
I mean, Sophia, this is the first time you've been involved in kind of bringing one of these restaurants to life. So, I mean, what was it like for you? You've kind of watched all these places open over the years, but this time you actually got to contribute.
Yes. So for Zaranda, my big role was basically working on the menus and kind of helping keep track of any changes that we made. And also like the layout and kind of the organization of the menu. And so that was a really exciting and fun process for me. I learned a lot. It's one of my favorite parts of what I help my parents with is like menu development. So it was like, I feel like I basically took like a history class at the same time. So I really learned a lot about like the Spanish influence that, you know, the Spanish originally owned that territory, Las California. So that's why we have arroces on the menu. And that's why we have a gin and tonic on the menu. And then also learned about, you know, the Chinese immigrants and Japanese immigrants that came and like their stamp on Baja food. And that was, you know, it's shown throughout our menus of different sauces and different flavors. And so it was really interesting kind of like creating this menu that's very different from our other restaurants, because it's not, as some people think, like as traditionally Mexican or what they know as Mexican food, because it has all these like kind of surprising different flavors and techniques together. So that was super fun for me to get to learn that. And that was kind of my role, was to help our servers in training, because we took a lot of servers from the other restaurants who are very experienced. And for them, the major part of their training was understanding that area and being able to explain all these things that we're explaining to you. So that was me with all my PowerPoint presentations and helping them with different recipes. So that was a really fun project for me. And yeah, it was great working with my parents on it too, and kind of all of our ideas coming together.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to ask you about, because I love my parents. I don't think I would ever want to work with them. So what is it like, do you struggle to find that balance between like, I'm your business partner and I'm a professional, but also like you're their kid. And so like, you gotta be judicious about that, you know, especially in front of the staff, like how you treat each other.
Yeah. So I get that comment a lot, which is, it's funny because it is, you know, very different, and a lot of people like can't imagine working with family, or it would be too difficult working with family. For me, I'm an only child, so I'm very close. Like, we're a very close family unit, the three of us. And also, like, you know, the restaurants have been a huge part of me growing up and like my seeing my parents work together. And so it's just kind of like, I think for us comes very naturally to work together, just because it's kind of all we know. It's all I know. I've really only ever worked for my parents, grown up in the restaurants. And a lot of the employees have known me since I was like a little kid. So they've seen me grow up. And I mean, I think that we all kind of, in some ways, like have our own lane, but then at the same time, we kind of overlap each other, but we're always open to hearing kind of different opinions. Cause I think we, for the most part, are always on the same page, but we always want to like, you know, explore different ideas and kind of like, you know, throw ideas off of each other. And that's when I think the best decisions are made. So for us, it works. But I could see how for others it'd be challenging. But I love it. So,
I mean, Tracy, just elaborate on that from your perspective. What's it been like working with Sophia?
I think that Hugo and I are very lucky to have Sophia be interested in what we're doing and also to have her living in the same city. Many of her friends have moved to other cities and are doing other things, and the parents see them.
During the holidays.
Well, yeah, much less frequently. And, you know, I really grappled when she was in college with trying not to try to influence her and what she would do later. And I purposefully held back rather than encouraging that because I didn't want her to make a mistake. I didn't want to influence her to do something that really wasn't for her. So she finally did come to me and say, well, I'm ready to go to graduate school at the Hilton Hotel School. And I said, really? And so, yeah, she did that during the pandemic. So we were next to one another in this office that we're all in right now. You know, and she would take her Zoom calls, you know, for classes. So anyway, I feel very fortunate. And Sophie is very intuitive. And the way she communicates is very thoughtful and sensitive. And I think that's so valuable for our staff and everybody loves her. And so, you know.
Well, I have the best teachers. That's why.
Hugo, tell me a little bit about kind of the specific dishes on the menu or maybe, you know, make some recommendations for people who are listening to this who haven't been to Zaranda yet. Like, where do you, because it is kind of a sprawling menu with a lot of choices. Where do you start or how do you build maybe an ideal first meal there?
The foundation of the menu is to cook a protein in the Zaranda, right? That is the foundation of the menu is a very unique a piece of equipment. It's a fish basket. And then secondly, it has so much depthness, Eric. We can make a rice, you know, like a vegetable rice or arroz, or seafood rice, or duck rice, or, you know, many other rice that eventually we come to the menu. And then once you put your hand or develop something that is raw, something that you cannot manipulate by just respect seriously the freshness of this piece of fish, in this case, it can be tuna, or it can be hamachi, and letting it speak by himself, all what you need sometimes is just salt. All what you need sometimes is just a crispy tortilla. All what you need sometimes is just a very simple sauce or the green
ponzu.
You know, there is a very light, or we just season it with furikake instead of season it heavily with salt or pepper or other spices. So You have this cuisine that is so incredible, giving, and it can be just as simple as you want to, because the fresh and the quality of shellfish can be, or you can create something that you have some local peppers from that area and make a dátil mole, for example. With the
tell me what dátil is.
Dátil is the date mole that we have, that we serve with a duck and a crispy skin in a flour tortilla. So
wait, we have to tell a story about that.
What is that?
The taco de pato is in.
So Sofia is going to explain to you, you know, this dish. The you know, she explained to me, and she wanted me to recreate something, you know, the similar to what she experienced.
Okay, so on the menu, we have a category for like antojitos, so basically tacos, and then we have lamb empanadas, and then we also have tostada section. In the antojito section, we have a duck taco de pato. And basically how that came to be was I was doing a lot of research on the Asian influence in Baja, and I saw that Japanese influence was kind of more prevalent in that area than Chinese influence. So I still wanted to kind of pay homage to a Chinese dish or some way incorporate that. So my dad and I, one of our favorite dishes of all time is Peking duck. We go to Fung's. It's great. We love it. So I was like, I kind of want to somehow do like pay tribute to Peking duck, but like in a Mexican way. So I was like, just kind of gave him my idea. I was like, can you like make Peking duck, but make it Mexican, maybe like in taco form? I don't know. Just kind of like see where that takes you. And then that's where our duck taco was born. So basically it's like a confit duck taco with on a flour tortilla, and it has the green onion, it has the cucumber, and then instead of the plum sauce, it's like a date mole, which is sweet, and then it has a like a duck skin chicharron, which is kind of like, you know, paying tribute to the crispy skin of the duck. And anyway, it was a really fun dish to kind of come up with, and it's delicious. That's definitely one that I recommend to people, one of my favorites.
I'm gonna say yes to all of that. please and thank you. And then the one other thing is, you know, all of your restaurants are kind of known for their show-stopping desserts, you know, whether it's the El Coco at Caracol that you have with the hammer, or the cacao pot at Sochi. Your brother Ruben is the pastry chef. And the chocolate uni looks to be like the new version. So tell me a little bit about the chocolate uni and kind of how you got to that as like the signature dessert for Zaranda.
So that was like, my mom and I were kind of like, you know, sometimes when we're talking with Ruben, he is so creative and he is like really great at putting flavors together. Sometimes he needs a little bit of inspiration to like get the creative juices flowing.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to like give people a box, right? And let them like figure out how to work within the restraints. That it inspires creativity.
Exactly. Yes. So my mom and I, we were just kind of like brainstorming, like what can be the signature dessert at Zaranda. We wanted something, you know, because the other restaurants have their signature desserts, like you mentioned, like the cacao and the cocoa or the pyramid at Hugo's. So we wanted it to something to be like symbolic of the area. So I was kind of like going through different, just like sea creatures really in my mind of what could be something that could be visually really interesting and kind of complex and representative of that area. So we would just, me and my mom would be like driving around to different meetings, going to the restaurants for like a couple weeks, kind of just like thinking of different ideas of what it could be. And then one day it just kind of came to me and I was like, a sea urchin, like somehow like visually kind of show that, but then have it be like on the inside, something is yellow. So it looks like the uni. I don't know. Again, I just kind of give the thoughts and I'm like, you know, maybe you can come up with something. And so
come on, Uncle Ruben, you could figure it out. No problem.
Right. Yeah. And he's always like, okay, Sophia, like a very complicated idea, but I'm on it. So it took several tries to kind of like get all of the flavors together. But that's really how it came to be. And each time we would kind of like critique it or change something here and there until we were overall very happy with it. So that's definitely a standout. And the other one is our dólar de arena, which is a sand dollar. And that was my mom's little idea creation. So that was another fun kind of representative item on the menu. So.
Right. And then the one that has, I've forgotten what we call it, but the one that has the macadamia and.
Yeah, galleta de macadamia.
Yeah, that one is another one that has a lot of those flavors. It's really, really nice. It has the black sesame ice cream. I really love that one too.
Yeah.
So.
All right. You've been open for a couple of weeks now. How's it going?
I think it's going really well. We did, we opened, I think it was for 2 weeks dinner only, then we added happy hour for a week, and then we added lunch. And so we were pretty gradual about that, and that was a good thing because it allowed them to work during the day on the dinner menu, you know, and everybody could train more, you know, with more time. And so now I would say the thing we're working on to try to build lunch, for example, is mostly travelers. So it's a little harder to build. So we're looking at our SEO and we're looking at, we have like a little sign outside the door, one of those little A-frame signs that says exactly what we are. And just trying to make sure we've talked to all the concierges. And so we are trying to approach the traveler, you know, who probably would have no idea who we were and what, you know, what we were doing.
You would relate to this, Eric. Back in 2017, when we opened Sochi, during that short period of time is when we were celebrating the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was playing, it was taking place here in Houston. So we see these hundreds and hundreds of people passing down the street, and we cannot bring one inside of the restaurant. I went up there and I say, we're serving Oaxacan cuisine and mezcal.
Outside the front door.
Outside of the front door. People. And then, so finally, one curious person, after hearing that, he come back and say to ask me this question. He say, what is mezcal?
Well, no, he said, is it Japanese?
Oh, well, that was
the name was Sochi, sounded like it looked Japanese. He had no idea. Yeah,
you're like, look, I've got a James Beard Award. Like, just trust me. I'm well, nationally recognized. I know what I'm doing.
Remember that a lot of these people are coming from Iowa or, you know, Nebraska. They have no idea. So I said, oh my gosh, we've got to hurry up and put on all the doors, outside doors, Mexican food agave bar, just so people have some idea what the heck we're doing over there. And so, with that under our belts, we knew at Zaranda we needed also to translate that into simple language that was do get confused.
You need to come by and try our brunch on Saturday, and also order we have a drink that we serve with sake.
I think you've seen that. Maybe not.
Sake and a little bit of pulque.
Yeah, I haven't been in for a proper meal yet, so I owe you guys a visit for sure.
Yeah, please let me know when you're coming.
Oh, I will. I mean, in terms of lunch business, you've got, hundreds of lawyers above you, right? Like, you got to lure them in. I don't know. I bring them all duck tacos. That sounds persuasive to me.
The building is about half full right now, I think. They've got commitments, and they're building spaces out and everything. But Yeah, and we are getting, you know, local people and people who live in the Park Place and Park Side, I think it's called, residences. It's right across from Sochi. So, you know, that's all beginning to happen as well. But, you know, it's a process.
All right. Can we hit a couple other non-Zaranda topics before I let y'all go?
Sure.
Talk to me about the status of Backstreet Cafe, because you are currently, you tore down the old one, you're rebuilding. How's it going?
It's going okay. We have a few things that you wouldn't even be able to tell if you were looking at it from the outside. But for instance, we had to do retention. I always get confused which word that is. So I had to dig like the equivalent of several swimming pools down below and fill it with these sort of crates, plastic crates. So we did that. And then we decided we needed a basement for storage. And so we did that. And so now we're finally going up with the steel. And I believe that all the major steel is now done. And we're going in with the minor, the smaller gauge steel. And we'll finish that in the next, I think, 2 weeks. And then, you know, then we're going to be really off to the races. But we're doing pretty well now. Now that we're going up, we're moving a lot faster.
I mean, it's such a popular Mother's Day destination. Do you think will we be having Mother's Day brunch at Backstreet Cafe?
I don't know. You know, I'm not going to commit to that because I'm not sure. We have a tentative commitment for the elevator that's a hard date. And so, you know, I've asked him, like, what are you doing? Like, since you're running a little bit late, what are you doing about that hard commitment on the elevator? Because you have to make that appointment like way in advance for I don't know why. But they said they still think there's a chance they could make that date. So we'll see. Today I was with Sophie kind of agonizing over the color of the stain that'll be on the walls downstairs. So, you know, we're moving ahead. We have a weekly meeting about it.
Picture.
No.
Well, no, I mean, but it is like a real challenge, right? Because people have a very fixed idea of what they expect Backstreet Cafe to look like. You've got to recreate and update that in a way that's right.
And it won't look the same. But we're not going to rebuild a 1935 house, right? We're
going
to do something more strong and modern.
I got a story to tell you, a quick story. So about a year and a half, Tracy come to me and say, "So Hugo, where do you see Backstreet going?" You know, by that time we already knew that we were going to close and all that. And I don't know if you noticed, but around River Oaks Shopping Center, since a new company took over, bought it's a new company running the shopping center. And there is open left and right restaurants. So the last time I count is they over 15 restaurants. So I told Tracy, I thought that she would go for that idea. I say, and Sophia, I say, let's build a parking lot. You know, you can just build a parking lot because the traffic is bad now and you can charge $20 for it and you don't have that thing to worry about it. But anyhow,
he's teasing you.
Tracy say, no, we want to rebuild from the ground up and all that. And I say, okay, so I got a job for the next 100 years. And the position that I'm going to take is going to be washing dishes, a secure for a position for life. So around May, we should be ready to go sometime in there.
Hopefully.
Yes, that's
fingers crossed. As Sophia indicated on the video feed.
Yes.
the other couple things I just want to ask you about. You know, the Chronicles Top 100 just came out. Casa Emma was number 3. Belly of the Beast was number 4. I know Stephanie, Nick, and Thomas worked for you at some point in their time. in Houston prior to opening their own places. So, what do you sort of take from their success, or you know, how does it feel to see people that work for you kind of go on to such such acclaim?
There's also Adrian from Maximo. He worked for us as well.
Yeah.
Beatrice.
And Beatrice also.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. Your family, the Hugo Ortega, the H Town family tree is well represented. Right. And you got two restaurants in the top 100 too. Not trying to slight you guys.
When it comes to that, Eric, I'm very happy for them. You know, we all have our own talent, right? And as you know, this business, it cannot just run on talent. I mean, you need to have an army these days to be able to race to the top and so on. But I'm just very proud of them because they are tremendous individuals and they talented and they have accomplished things that they are very difficult to accomplish. And we know those things are firsthand. And you probably know how tough is this business to be. We are blessed, meaning H-Town Restaurant Group is blessed because I dedicate my heart and soul to create recipes and research and be passionate about it. But I have Tracy, you know, and I have Sophia, but I just try to analyze and embrace that what they do, and it's very brave, and they are very capable and very talented people, and they deserve every single award that they can possibly win.
And then the one other thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, the Michelin Guide has come out a couple of years now, and people like me who sort of, you know, we sort of get angry, right? We're happy for the people who got recognized and sort of baffled by the people who didn't. You know, it's you and Hori-san at Kata Robata that are the two names that we're just like, I don't understand how you haven't been included. Have you heard anything from Michelin? Do you know if they've been to your restaurants? Do you have an opinion about not being included in this whole process?
I don't, we have not heard from them. And I know that the employees were disappointed. And what I told the employees was, we need to be very consistent and work very hard and make sure that our plates are the same. They're the best they can be every single day. And, you know, to that end, if we improve and are better every day, whether we get in the guide or not, that's going to be beneficial for us. So that's what our goal is, just to do a better job every day. So that's our message.
Well, I'm going to keep, you know, every time I write about it, this ridiculous omission of Hugo Ortega is just, this is an injustice that will not stand, or at least we're going to keep commenting on it until they either explain themselves or give in and pick one of the restaurants and put it in there.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you, Eric. personally, I think, you know, it gives us, like Tracy said, the opportunity to refine our craft, and life is much bigger than any award. And first and foremost, I have those incredible cooks and personal and friends, family that were shoulder to shoulder with me, and we try to do our best day in and day out. God knows that this is a very challenging industry, and we put our hearts and soul into it in every dish that we put together. And hopefully, Hori, you know, we mention it sooner, because I know that Hori is there every day. And I do too, but, you know, I go to Sochi, I go to Saranda, I change the menu seasonally. And it's my job to bring everybody along with me and to be a wonderful chefs and a wonderful and servant to a great community. And we will continue to put our heart and soul into what we love to do. And that is just create a recipe and cook for Houstonians and everybody else.
All right, fair enough. All right, well, I do have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you would like to discuss?
We thank you for you to be who you are and to see deeply, you know, in this case, see deeply into the, you know, the Michelin star and all these other awards. And, you know, we thank you because you're there, and we feel that there is that we have a voice through you, and that means the world to us.
Well, that's very kind of you. I really, you know, this podcast especially was sort of created as a forum because, I mean, you know very well, we would sit down for an interview at Caracol or Sochi or any of these other places, and we would talk for an hour, and then the article comes out and it's 800 words, and you're like, oh, what about the anecdote that we shared, you know, at the 45-minute mark? And it's, you know, these articles can only be so long. So, you know, I wanted to bring those conversations into a way that people could hopefully appreciate them and learn something from them. And it's been so gratifying for me to have this forum. And so I really appreciate you guys agreeing to participate. Before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. I don't know. I've never lightning round with three people. You know what, Sophia, I'm going to pick on you. I'm going to make you the designated lightning round representative. Okay. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Sophia Ortega, what is your favorite ingredient?
Just like a single, I'm going to go with like, my first thought is to go with like, you know, mole or salsa. So I'm going to say like a pepper, maybe.
All right. Fair. All right. No, it's a perfectly good answer.
Okay.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
I want to say, I think it was, this is embarrassing. I think it was a Hannah Montana concert.
That's such a good Gen Z answer. That's so great. All right. What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
I know that one already.
Oh yeah. Okay. It's the 8-count nuggets at Chick-fil-A.
Oh.
Or the number 13 at Whataburger chicken strips. Yes.
All right. Who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Oh, sports figure? Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm so sorry. I don't watch a lot of sports. So, Dad, can you throw in one?
I can tell you mine.
Tell me yours.
King Olajuwon.
It's a great choice. All right. And then last question, and any of the three of y'all can jump in. I know you've been busy opening Zaranda, but what is a new Houston restaurant you haven't been to yet, but are dying to try?
Okay. I have a good one for that. I'm actually going tomorrow night. Yaya Mary's. I'm really excited to try that. I've heard really good things.
We've been to Yaya's. It's wonderful.
And so I'm going to try it for the first time tomorrow.
Hugo or Tracy, do you have a new restaurant that's on your radar?
Well, there's a new one in River Oaks Center that we haven't been to. Maison Chinois,
the Chinese restaurant.
We've been to Yaya Mary's, and I really enjoyed that. And I like the conviviality of the dining room. I thought they did a good job on that. Where else is a new restaurant that is interesting and compelling to go to?
Have you gone to see Brian Caswell at La Tuile yet?
Yeah, we've been. Yes.
We have. Yeah.
And he was there, and we have a great meal. That was wonderful, very pretty space.
Yeah.
It's a must-go place to dine.
I think he hit the nail on the head over there. I think that's going to be a good neighborhood spot.
All right. Well, on your way out the door, give us the website and the social media for Zaranda.
Okay, zarandahouston.com. And then on Instagram, Zaranda Hugh, H-O-U.
Right.
And we're on Facebook. Yes.
Tracy, Sophia, and Hugo, thank you very much.
Thank
All
you.
right.
Thank
Thank
you,
you so
Ray.
much.
Thanks so much. And please come by for brunch.
Coming soon, I promise.
Thank you.
Bye. See you then.
Thank you.
All right. You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to take a week off for Thanksgiving, but I'll be back in December with new episodes.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.